Welcome back. Junkies come to you live on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980 in the DMV, 910 The Fan, 105.1 FM in Richmond. We're streaming live on the Odyssey app, and you can watch us on the Monumental Sports Network, brought to you by our friends at Krupp Metcalf. They're the official heating and cooling company of the Junkies. Looking to be their next five-star HVAC technician or plumber, just visit kruppmetcalf.com, and you can join their team today. The TB, Fish Bucks, and JP hanging out here on a Friday, and joining us right now to talk some movies is our pal Kevin McCarthy, entertainment reporter for Fox 5. Hey, Kevin.
Good morning, my Papa Rick. So I'm getting ready to head to New York to talk to the cast of Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
Well, who's on that cast?
Well, Michael Keaton.
Pretty stacked, dude.
I don't know anybody. Go ahead.
So I see the movie tonight, and then tomorrow I'm talking to Michael Keaton, Catherine O'Hara, who obviously Home Alone, she's the one that says, Kevin! Jenna Ortega, who you guys might know from Wednesday. She's also in Scream 5. Winona Ryder, who I've never spoken to before, which I'm excited about. Justin Theroux, pretty big name.
Yep.
And then you guys know Monica Bellucci?
Nope. Monica Bellucci.
Look up Monica Bellucci. She's awesome. Pretty fact.
How would we know Monica Bellucci? Let's see.
I mean, for me, she did a movie with Clive Owen. It was an action film, like right around the time I started doing movie reviews for you guys.
She's almost 60. She's 59 years old.
Yeah, I remember her from a movie called Irreversible. Like, she's like you definitely have seen her in something before. It's one of those like actors that you go, oh, I've seen that person before.
So we got to talk about the Matthew Perry situation. Man, it blows me away.
I know. I want to dedicate a whole segment to it.
Five people are going to go down for this. Two doctors arrested, the drug dealer.
Sounds like
the personal assistant. Yeah.
The doctors are texting each other saying, literally, quotes, I wonder how much this moron will pay.
I know. It's incredible. That's the story. People are going to go down hard for Matthew Perry.
And they have a woman out there known as the ketamine queen.
She
delivers it to people. The assistant is injecting him. I almost feel bad for the assistant.
Matthew was probably saying, I need it.
He's probably making him do it.
Yeah, I need it. I want it. Yeah.
The doctors are the ones that are really, I think, reprehensible.
It's a crazy story, Kevin. Yeah.
I'll be honest, I honestly don't know enough about what you guys are referring to, because I think that what you're talking about came out either yesterday or
came out yesterday.
Before.
Yeah, I mean, it's the biggest story in Hollywood right now.
No, I know. I mean, if I'm being completely honest, I have not read up on that particular part of the story yet, so I would feel uncomfortable commenting on it. I don't really know much.
All right,
about
all right. So I'll spare you that. Yeah. How about I saw you posted a clip, your interview where. With Mark Wahlberg, and he's jockeying you about your hip-hop knowledge and everything.
Dude, that was crazy.
When did that happen? Just recently?
Yeah, so all of a sudden, like, my work has been finding, like, a bit of a larger audience, and I don't know, I guess my...
How? Why is it?
Well, the only difference in terms of, like, my work now is that, like, people sometimes, if you hashtag things a certain way, or if you put like whatever in your hashtags, it'll pop on someone's reels on Instagram rather than just your own followers. So what happened with this interview that you're talking about is, I guess I had no idea. I was sitting in front of my computer. We're getting ready to talk to Mark Wahlberg for this movie called The Union. Him and Halle Berry have a new film, and he pops up on my screen and he goes into this entire thing about how he came across a video of mine where I was interviewing this guy, Toby Wegway, and we were talking about hip hop and the year 2022. And I was telling him that, you know, my favorite albums of that year were like Kendrick Lamar and Ab Soul, Denzel Curry. Who else was I talking about? Pusha T. And then Nas, who had put out King's Disease 3, which I think is one of the greatest hip hop albums I've heard. I mean, I think it's on Illmatic level, which I know is a bold statement. But anyway, so I was interviewing Toby Wegway and I was telling him all these things. So I posted this clip on my Instagram, and I guess Mark Wahlberg came across it and starts going off on that in the beginning
him.
Of my conversation.
You impressed him. Has he indicated before that he would remember you when you would interview him?
Yeah, I mean, I've interviewed Mark Wahlberg probably over 10 times in the time frame that I've done this as a job, but he's never brought up another interview of mine to me the way he did in that moment. It was like, and then I got off the call and then he followed me. And then he left a comment under the video as well. And it was funny to me because I always forget that Wahlberg had a hip hop career.
Right.
So I completely had forgotten that even in the moment. I was just
Kevin.
Like,
Obnobbing.
Hey, Kevin,
somebody else noticed your work too that was famous.
Amy Poehler did recently. A couple people. Like, I walked into a room with Amy Poehler, and she was like, "I'm a big fan. I watch your work all the time." I just blows my mind that I can't imagine.
He's in the algorithm now. He figured out a hashtag or something. Man, it's part of the social media game.
Well, he also been doing it a long time, yes. And he's at these events.
Yeah, he's a respected journalist.
Yeah,
I've been doing it for 19 years. It's
crazy. You really should have a tattoo of the Junks.
I know. I need all four of your faces. Remember that animated picture of all four of your faces that there was like a
caricature.
I know it was probably a multi of them. Yeah, there was a caricature. Sure. I remember that.
That would work if you want to do that. I'd accept that.
We were young looking. I'd accept that.
All right, what's up this week?
All right, so the big movie this week is Alien Romulus. I don't know if you guys are at all interested in this. I kind of am.
I liked all the other ones.
Yeah, I mean, it's so funny because I was thinking about this the other day. Like Hollywood, obviously, with you want more original ideas in Hollywood, but there are certain franchises that just somehow work and still bring people in. I mean, I feel like the Alien films have always been that way. This takes place years after the original Alien. And so essentially the idea is a group of these, and the earlier Alien films, this is a group of like younger kids almost, not like kids, but like kids who are probably like in their 20s or something like that. They're living on a planet where they're being, essentially just worked to death, and they decide that they're going to go off into space and find this ship that could somehow get them out of there and get them to a better place of living. And this ship is owned by the company who's basically running their lives and everything. But on this ship, of course, is some type of alien presence. And the stars of the film are Kaylee Spaney. You might know her from Civil War. She was fantastic in that film recently. But other than her, a lot of the actors I was not familiar with, especially this guy named David Johnson, who is absolutely brilliant in the film. Directed by a guy named Fede Alvarez, who did the 2013 Evil Dead. He also did a movie called Don't Breathe, which is a really terrifying horror film. And so this is R-rated. It's meant to be in the horror genre a bit as well. If you guys remember, Alien 1 was a horror film, essentially. It was a horror film, sci-fi film. Aliens, the James Cameron film, was more of an action film. So like Ridley Scott did the original, and then James Cameron stepped in and did 2, and that was the action film. This kind of combines both genres, which I thought was really cool. I can't really get into a lot of the reasons why I didn't love it, because it would spoil things. I liked the film a lot. It's so funny because, like, you guys ever watch a movie and you're like 90% into it and you're like, this is awesome. And then all of a sudden they just do something that just completely takes you out of the movie. And you it's almost like you have to, like, it's almost like you were bowling without bumpers. And all of a sudden in the last 10 minutes, you decided to put bumpers up for some weird reason. It just kind of like the movie just kind of found a safety that it felt unhinged. And then it became safe in a weird way, or it reminded you, you're watching a movie.
A lot of times you don't like the ending of a movie, which you'll really enjoy a movie. And then you don't like the ending and it kind of ruins it.
Is the ending bad?
No, see, the ending's not bad. It's just there's a moment towards the end, which I'm not going to get into.
Just bothers me.
That really bothered me. It just pulled me out. And there's also so this filmmaker Fede Alvarez, he's known for practical effects. Like he does. So a lot of the film is built around practical effects. And there's just a couple of CGI moments that also threw me off as well. That being said, the action set pieces are incredible. The production value is incredible. The performances are great. It's brutal. This Kaylee Spaney character is essentially, like the Sigourney Weaver type of character from the Alien films. And, and there's just some really, really interesting action set pieces. Like there's like 5 or 6 scenes that I think I was pumping my fist. Like it was like, this is awesome. And so I do think that there's a reason to go see it in a theater. I just think that there's a few things that I had such problems with that it really just hurt the film overall. Like, I was probably four and a half out of five originally. And then just these things kept happening. It just kept like taking it down to a 3.5 ultimately. And I do think the rating on Rotten Tomatoes is probably relatively high, because my review would be considered a fresh rating. I would, you know, 3.5 out of 5 would be a fresh. So I would be joining that chorus. But it's good. It's just not great. And yeah. I think some of the problems that I have with it, you might not have with it. But, you know, Jason, if you went on a Tuesday for like $5-6 yeah. and sat in a theater for 2 hours,
yeah,
and,
I'd probably
you
know, like watch, it. Yeah.
You probably dig it. Yeah. I mean, it's not, here's the thing. Go back and watch the original Alien. I don't know if people remember how brutal that first Alien film is. Do you guys remember the scene with John Hurt on the table with the chest
burster? Of course. Yes.
Like, you go back and watch that scene, that still looks phenomenal. And a lot of the effects that Fetty does in this film are on that level. They do some really cool world building. Like, there's like, I won't give anything away, but there's some really cool ways that he plays with the older versions of the special effects. But back in the day when John Hurt did that scene, they had a guy under the table that pushed through the body double that made the alien pop out of his chest. And like that kind of like old school special effects, that stuff still holds up because it was done in camera.
So 3.5.
Yeah.
For Alien Romulus.
That ain't good.
Kevin, we got to run.
I really don't want to give it that rating, because it actually has scenes that make it a 4.5. Like,
stick
easily.
Stick to your
like,
rating. Kevin, we got to run. We got a guest coming up next.
All right, guys.
All right. Thank
you, Kevin.
Kev
McCarthy, Fox right, 5, peace. Alien Romulus. You're going to go see it?
He gave it a 3.5. I don't know.
3.5's on the bubble.
Maybe.
It's like a bubble team.
Maybe. It might be on a good Tuesday afternoon flick.
Coming up next, we will tackle some college football. Chris Doering, former Gator wide receiver, NFL vet, current analyst on ESPN and the SEC Network, joins us here on The Junk. Welcome back. Chucky's coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980 in the DMV, 910 The Fan, 105.1 FM in Richmond, Virginia. We're streaming live all across the country on the Odyssey app. You can take us on the go with that Odyssey app, and you can watch us on the Monumental Sports Network, brought to you by friends at Crop Metcalf, official heating and cooling company of the Junks. Chris Doering joins us now on the BetQL Guest Hotline, longtime friend of the show, former Gator wide receiver, played for the Redskins. Now you can watch him on ESPN and the SEC Network, co-host of SEC This Morning on SiriusXM. What's up, Chris?
Good morning, boys. Good to be back with you, man. Been a minute.
It's been a while.
What was your summer like? Summer highlights?
Oh, man. Shoot. I went back down to the Bahamas a couple weeks ago.
Took
bad beats, but that's all right. Let's see what else I did. It's kind of a low-key summer, man. None of the big trips. Didn't hit Wimbledon this year. No Europe travel. So, I don't know, man. It seems like it flew by. I had a lot of things on the list I didn't get to this year.
Is your oldest still in college?
No, my oldest graduated from Florida in May, man.
Wow.
So she's a UF grad, and my son is finishing up or about to start his third year up at Savannah College of Art and Design in Savannah, Georgia.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Very cool.
Are you still an Atlantis guy, or have you moved over to Baja Mar?
No, I'm very loyal, so I'm still an Atlantis guy at this point. But I'm up for potential NIL deals to the Baja Mar and transfer portal.
When you go to Atlantis, do you? I assume you stay at the Cove.
Yeah, always at the Cove.
Do you get your own cabana?
Yeah, man. Of course. You got to be a cabana guy.
I'm so
low rent. I don't even do the Cove.
The Cove is legit.
I don't want to be out there just raw dogging it on the side of the pool by myself. I got to have a cabana for some coverage.
I hear you. But can you believe that we're 8 days away from the season? Florida State and Georgia Tech play a noon game next Saturday. I can't believe we're 8 days away.
I know. It's crazy, too. You know what, guys? I was in Dallas for SEC Media Days a couple weeks back, and all summer long it felt like we were dealing with these really heavy subject matters as it related to college football, whether it was the congressional ruling and the settlement that's mm-hmm. forthcoming, whether it's the fans being disenchanted with NIL and transfer portal stuff. And then I got to Dallas, man, and it just had this feeling of of optimism, and maybe the most highly anticipated season that I can remember in a long time, whether it was because OU and Texas were walking around there, or whether it was because the playoff is coming and a new look for how we decide a national champion. But it feels like this is the most anticipated season that I can remember in a long time, despite all the negative stuff that was going on in the offseason.
How do you feel about the 12-team playoff?
I love it, man. I can't wait. You know, I look at it as a player from that perspective. Like, I remember being a kid thinking, oh, man, the NCAA basketball tournament is awesome. Why can't they do this in football? You know, every other level of sport in college was being decided by a big tournament, and yet there was still an archaic way of deciding a national champion in football. And so we've evolved, and we're getting closer and closer to what I always imagined was a 16-team playoff. We'll have 12 now, and a couple years we'll go to 14. But man, I would have loved as a player to have a chance to play in something like that. I've always enjoyed that Selection Sunday show, and I can only imagine what it's going to be like when we have the selection show here for this upcoming 12-team playoff. It's going to be a lot more fan bases that are involved in some meaningful games down the stretch. Players are going to have a chance to play in more meaningful games. I think it's going to be good for the sport in general.
And the FCS has been doing it forever. I mean, a tournament with a lot of teams.
Yep.
And, you know, not that the preseason poll means much because you haven't played a game yet, but 9 of the 16 are ranked in the preseason from the SEC, including Georgia at 1. And I wanted to kind of get your take on Georgia. Not surprised that they're 1, but, you know, Carson Beck comes back for his second year. He's been around forever, but obviously sitting behind Stetson Bennett for a few years. Had a good year last year. Didn't throw up huge touchdown numbers, but completed like 73% of his passes. When you look at the potential first round of the draft next year, he's always at the top, you know, near the top of the list for teams that are going to need a quarterback. Your boy Trevor Etienne leaves your school to go fetch some money, I'm guessing, at Georgia at running back. I wonder how much he got. Do you know?
There were rumors that it was...
Was it about a million?
30 grand a month is what I had heard. 35 grand a month, something. I don't know what to believe.
It's nuts.
But, yeah, one of the things he was supposedly motivated by more so was having a chance to be the number one back. And he split reps with Montrell Johnson last year here at Florida, who returned. So I think he was also looking for more opportunity, which is interesting because, you know, one of the things that we talk about now as it relates to running backs is how much they've been devalued in the NFL because of the proliferation of the passing game, but also because of how, you know, replaceable those guys are. And you'd think that, you know, leaving a little tread on the tires in college would be something that a running back would want to do. But getting a chance to carry the ball more, playing in an offense in Georgia where it revolves, you know, that unequivocally, we argue about who DBU is in college, but unequivocally the RBU title goes to Georgia with what they've had over the years. And the way that Mike Bobo, you know, runs his offense, the way that offensive line is built, it's a good fit for him. I think he's going to have a tremendous season in Athens, despite my personal allegiances to Florida and being a little upset with him deciding to leave.
Do you think Carson Beck is the best quarterback in the conference?
I do. Yeah. I think he's the best quarterback in the country.
And
I think that the way they used him last year was exactly the way that they should have. And you mentioned he'd been around forever, but he hadn't started until last season.
Mm-hmm.
Georgia fans were upset in the first couple games of the year of how conservative the offense was and, you know, how they wanted to see a little more creativity. But they actually, you know, Mike Bobo started to feed him more as the season went on and fed him more when they needed him to be more aggressive. I thought it was just a perfect utilization. And I think he's going to have a big year this year after experiencing what he did in his first year as a starter last season.
So this will be the first season in the SEC with Texas and Oklahoma, right?
Yep.
Correct.
What are your expectations for those two teams?
I'm excited about those two teams coming into the league. I mentioned them at Media Days. You know, just watching them walk around with the prestigious nature of those two logos, it's a perfect fit. The coaches, you know, both Sark and Venables are great fits for this league. The thing that surprised me, though, is how much talk there is about, you know, Texas coming right into the league and being in Atlanta for the SEC championship game and being a national championship contender. I thought it's a little naive to believe that you just come into this conference and you're ready to dominate. It is a physically grueling conference when you get into the SEC schedule. It's mentally fatiguing as well, and I don't think that that's being accounted for when you talk about Texas coming in and winning, you know, 10, 11 games right off the jump. The other thing that surprised me is that despite Oklahoma dominating the Red River rivalry, I think whether they won 8 of the last 10 in that rivalry, Oklahoma's had far more college football playoff appearances in the last decade than Texas has. And yet we're not even talking about Oklahoma. Most people have them probably eighth or ninth in the conference, as you listed the rankings in Media Days. But I was a little interested by that as well. I understand that Oklahoma has a much more difficult schedule and still has something to prove. But I think a lot of people are putting a ton of emphasis on the fact that Texas went to Tuscaloosa last year and beat up Alabama in their own backyard. Did so by dominating the lines of scrimmage and really looking more athletic than what Alabama did. But that's still just a one-game sample size for me. I need to see more from them before I'm ready to say that, hey, they're ready to come in and be in Atlanta in December.
Well, you said you like Carson Beck as best quarterback in the country. Ewers gets a lot of hype. How far behind is he?
Not very far at all. You know, I think if you look at my list would probably include, I'd probably in the SEC go Carson Beck 1, Ewers 2, Jackson Dart 3, Brady Cook's another one at Missouri that deserves a little bit more love. I know ESPN put out their top 100 players heading into the season, and Jalen Milroe was the second rated quarterback in the SEC. I think he was at like 21 or 22. Carson Beck was one. Dylan Gabriel, the former OU and former UCF starter now at Oregon, was at the second position there, I think 16 overall. Jalen Milroe was the next one, which was a little surprising to me that he was so far ahead of where Jackson Dart was ranked and Brady Cook. But I think it has a lot to do with Kalen DeBoer, what the expectation is for his development as a passer. We know what he can do as a runner, but I need to see more from Jalen Milroe throwing the ball consistently on the short to intermediary throws before I'm ready to put him above a guy like Jackson Dart or even Brady Cook for that matter.
And getting back to the 12-team playoff, obviously in years past, which is the four teams, you know, if you lose two games, you're pretty much done. And you're not going to get in that top four. But now with 12, you're not out of it. And there might be 20 or 25 teams in the last couple weeks that are looking at that schedule going, all right, we got two losses, we got a good resume. A lot of those could be in the SEC. And there's some really cool stories in the SEC. Just mention a few of them.
I think you're looking at probably four teams getting in from the SEC, most likely. I think there's nine teams that are probably in contention to be amongst that four-team allocation of spots when we get all said and done. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, 10-2 is probably the record that you're looking at. But I do think, you know, if an Oklahoma goes 9-3 with how difficult their schedule is, if Florida for some reason could rip off nine wins, I think they could get in with a 9-3 resume. Georgia's another one. Georgia has an incredibly difficult schedule. I don't think people talk enough about how hard their schedule is.
I wanted to mention that. Yeah, that's big. Yeah.
Excuse me. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that, you know, everybody just assumes they're Georgia and they're going to win every game. But there's probably four teams everybody thinks about being at the top of the conference. It would include Georgia, Alabama, Ole Miss, and Texas. Georgia plays all three of those other, you know, top you know, four groupings. The other three in that list only play one, and that's Georgia. So Georgia has a tough trip to Tuscaloosa. They've got to go to Ole Miss. They've got to go to Austin. They get Tennessee at home. Got to go to Jacksonville for the cocktail party. I don't know that they're given enough credit. I have a hard time believing anybody goes undefeated. Georgia hadn't lost a regular season game since 2020, but I have a hard time believing they or anybody else is able to make it through the schedule unscathed. And you know, I think it's more realistic that you're looking at Georgia maybe with a 10-2 record this year. I think I don't see Alabama being better than 9-3. I don't think that Texas is going to come in and win more than 10 games in the first season. So I think there's going to be a lot of parity in the SEC, and it'll be interesting to see how the records shake out and how many teams that the SEC is able to get in if we're talking about a bunch of 10-2 and 9-3 teams.
So you mentioned DeBoer at Bama, obviously. Totally different style. Saban out. And that was a shocker from last year, him deciding to retire. Georgia, we've already talked about. LSU's defense was completely atrocious last year, so that's got to get better. And they lose the Heisman Trophy winner. They go to Grant Nessmeyer. Oklahoma's got a new quarterback, Jackson Arnold. Don't know anything about him. Ole Miss killed it in the transfer portal. Kiffin went out there and pulled a bunch of guys in. You mentioned Missouri. I mean, there's a bunch of stories in this conference. After Georgia, what intrigues you the most out of this?
Yeah, I think last year you go back and look at both Ole Miss and Missouri kind of come out of nowhere and win 11 games, and both are poised to do the same thing this year. Both are returning a lot of players. You mentioned the transfer portal and how well Lane Kiffin did in it this year, but really what has everybody feeling so excited about it is how many guys returned from last season in Oxford. My biggest kind of question is who's going to be this year's Missouri? Who's going to kind of come out of nowhere and win double-digit games? I think Tennessee could be maybe that team. You know, Nico Iamaleava is one that everybody's excited about.
Yeah, how good is he?
How good is he? Yeah. He's good, man. I saw him. I was in Knoxville for their spring. Their pro day. Saw their first spring scrimmage in Neyland Stadium last March, I think it was. He looked good, man. He's a big, tall kid, put on about 15 or 20 pounds. He can run better than people probably give him credit for. Ball comes out nice in his hands. You go back to last season, though, everybody was frustrated with Joe Milton, and certainly he had his challenges, but the passing game didn't work as well as it did under Hendon Hooker the previous 2 years, largely because the receivers just didn't catch the ball very well. That group's got to be better. I think they will be. The defense is stout. You guys keep an eye on a guy by the name of James Pierce Jr. Led the conference in sacks last year, returns for another season. A lot of people have him in the top five of the NFL draft coming up next April. So he's going to be one to watch. And yeah, I think that defense in general is going to be a lot better. I could see the Vols being a 10-win team and getting in the playoffs this season. Mm.
You watched him closely in college. We're now getting a taste of Jaden Daniels here in D.C. What should Commanders fans expect? All we're hearing are rave reviews.
I love the guy, man. He came in from Arizona State, and that first season as a starter back in 2022, he wasn't even guaranteed to be the starter. He won the job in camp largely because the offensive line was supposed to stink and that he was going to be something that could account for maybe some guys that were coming free with an offensive line that was young and inexperienced. He did that early on. You know, remember that first game against Florida State? They lose in New Orleans, and you know they don't look all that great. Offense kind of inconsistent in the first half of the season, and then they come to Florida, and somehow he goes like 10 of 14 on third downs, and I'm talking about medium to long. Yards to gain. And from there on, he just didn't let up. The trajectory of his remaining college career was tremendous. Throwing the football to a bunch of really talented receivers. The running ability is something you can't account for. I think it's going to help, it's going to force defenses in the NFL that play against Washington to have to play a lot of zone coverage to keep their eyes on him. You got to be very disciplined in the way you rush him, because if he breaks contain, he's out. You can't play man coverage, because if you have your back turned, it's going to be a 30 to 40 yard gain for him. The one thing I concerned about is he's kind of slight, man. He's a long, tall, thin guy. You guys watched RG3 come there and have a great season running it the first year, and then get hurt after that. He's got to be better at minimizing hits and hopefully putting a little bit more weight on to be a little more sustainable of some of those hits that he's going
to
end up taking.
Yeah, people are jacked to see it. Yeah. We're going to talk about it next segment. Just give us your thoughts real quick on RG3 getting let go at ESPN.
It's scary for me. I've always been a little frustrated that I haven't made more money, but I think at the same time, something good about being under the radar. Coach Spurrier used to always say, "Cheap and available are two good qualities." So for me, I'm just trying to keep on keeping on, entering my 10th year with ESPN now, and yep. I certainly feel for Sam Ponder and for RG3, but. It's the economics of the television business these days.
Yeah.
All right, brother. Good stuff.
Appreciate the time, man.
Let's get up a couple weeks, man. We'll talk game one, man. Looking forward to week one in the SEC.
100%. We'll get you on, man.
All right, boys. Thanks.
See ya.
Chris Doering, former Gator wide receiver, of course, played here in Washington for a while. That's when we got to know him. Now he's with the SEC Network, has his show SEC This Morning on Sirius XM.
Mm-hmm.
Coming up at 8, Fridays with Feinstein here on The Fan. So we just had Chris Doering on, and he alluded to it towards the end. I guess you asked him about it.
Yeah, just want to get his thoughts.
RG3 laid off by ESPN, as well as Sam Ponder, two high-profile analysts on ESPN. Obviously, RG3, we had on the show for a year doing call-ins.
Mm-hmm.
Was pretty popular, it seemed like, on ESPN. And when he first burst on the scene, people were surprised, like, wow, he's pretty good calling games.
Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't a main player. And then all of a sudden, he started doing more and more games and more high-profile games. And people were like, man, he's pretty good on the call. And then they expanded his role to the NFL.
Yep.
And people...
Monday Night Football.
Just assumed the meteoric rise was going to continue. But ESPN pulled the plug.
It's weird. I don't quite get it. I know. Listen, he's a nice guy, and he was, you know, nice on the show and everything. But he is. Let's be honest.
I think he's a little bit corny. I think he's hard to work with.
I don't know if he's hard to work with. Jason knows people over there. Maybe he is. But I know he's all about. He's an attention guy. He always has to be the center of attention.
The last thing that I saw is he did from the Olympics something with a croissant. His wife.
I know that was the dumbest picture ever. I can't believe that got so much attention.
But he gets millions of views on these social media posts. So,
yeah.
I mean, he'll be fine. He could probably make a killing just doing social media.
I got a good friend who I went to college with who's a producer at ESPN.
Mm-hmm.
He's been up there for years.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him about it, and I said, was it simply financial? Which didn't really jive to me because he's got 2 years left on his contract and it's guaranteed, so he's going to get paid.
Do we know it's guaranteed?
That's what the story says.
Because it makes no sense then. Yeah, so it makes no sense.
Well,
that's why. Financial.
That's why his answer is interesting. He says it's financial, and people didn't like him. I know you probably spent time with him in D.C. He's just weird, didn't vibe with people, and on SVP shows, SVP calls the shots. It was clear in September he wasn't going to survive that show. He made a good point about Keyshawn. When Keyshawn got let go last year, he had just signed an $18 million contract. He got every penny. Mm-hmm. So they honor those contracts, but for whatever reason, I think it's more than financial.
They blew.
I think it's how you are viewed by, you know, the other talent, by the producers, by management. If you're not liked, you don't last.
They blew out a lot of people, though. Remember the layoffs? I don't know if it was a year or two ago.
Yeah.
I mean, clearly they've been laying off people. I don't know about the honoring the money, and I certainly don't know any of the behind the scenes. I do think ESPN sometimes worry about their image, and I don't know the specific posts, but companies don't want you diving into politics, and I think he's had some political tweets.
Well,
too.
Sam Ponder has done that too.
Right. They don't want you doing that.
Well, why don't you just tell them?
Well, but if they don't follow your lead,
okay, then you let them
go. If you're ESPN and Disney.
But if they don't like it, I can't imagine the upper management at ESPN isn't telling them, hey, let's back off that.
Now, that said, I think I saw...
I don't think he can help himself.
I think I saw Herb Street, who basically said, I've been around too long, I don't give an F, here are my views.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you can, if you're really, really popular, I think it was Herb Street...
Depends if your views
that you might be able to pull it off.
But if your views are in line with your company sort of general feeling, then you're going to be fine.
But I'm sure that all the things you say are true and contributed to it. I think had he just stuck with, this is my own personal opinion and speculation, had he just stuck to what people were actually saying he was very good at, which was being the color commentator on college football games. Now, he never was the color commentator in the NFL games. He was
Monday Night Countdown.
He was Monday Night Countdown, and he was kind of their goofy bit guy, is the way I saw it. They made him run against the Seahawk or whatever, the Falcon. I can't remember what he ran against. He always seemed to do bits. They were like, you're the bits guy. But I think if he just stuck to that, put his head down and stuck to that, he'd been fine. I think my guess. It's my speculation. Some of the social media stuff got him in trouble.
I think
that's what makes,
because he does over the top social media, like, well, cheesy stuff.
You guys pay attention to that. I don't, but I would say that, okay, it's one thing to take him off the NFL Monday Night Countdown, but just let him ride his, unless you really don't like him as a person, let him ride out his contract calling college football games.
Also, I think on the NFL side, quite frankly, I'm going to guess he's going to be the new bit guy.
They
replaced him with Jason Kelsey.
Yes.
That's what happens. It's kind of like in the NFL on CBS, didn't they wipe out Boomer and Phil Sims?
Mm-hmm.
Like, eventually, now he's still young. RG3 is very young, but eventually they wipe out guys because new guys come in.
Right.
Yeah. This is different. This is just because he's a polarizing guy. I don't think he's a bad guy, but he's a me guy. It's a very much me centered guy. And, you know, I'm sure, he probably has pissed them off with some of the social media stuff. Not that it was horrible, but it's just so attention-y.
Yeah, he did cheesy over the top. Like, he would go, my top five Heisman candidates right now. And he was,
there's nothing wrong with that.
I know, but
the political stuff, I think, probably they don't love. It seemed like, I was talking to CK about it, and the phrase that a lot of people use is engagement farming. So he's just clearly just putting stuff out there to try to get as many clicks as he can.
He'll land a job because...
Oh, I think he'll end up in Big Ten Network or something.
I'm looking at
it. They'd hire him 2 seconds.
His Instagram, he's got 716,000 followers.
That's a ton on Instagram.
I'm trying to see if I can find out the views, but his view counts are probably humongous. I mean, here, the picture with the croissant and his wife. Some reason I can't see that one, but there's also one of just him holding this huge croissant. It's got 146,000 likes.
Yeah.
I don't pay attention to the Twitter posts like you guys do, but the story I read was Sam Ponder, who I think is very good, routinely puts her thoughts on controversial political views on Twitter. And I don't know if that's the reason they let her go. She's making 7 figures as well. Maybe that could be a budget thing, but she's very good.
She was very outspoken about the boys should play boys sports. Was very outspoken about that. And it's just a touchy issue for
RG3 went in on that too.
Yeah, so maybe ESPN said, hey, we got
to
stay off
that. By the way, I happen to agree with them, but it's a very hot button issue.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very, very
hot button. Sam Ponder and RG3, let go.
Because I'm looking at his last post. He did one, the Algerian boxer, which was somewhat controversial.
Very controversial.
Extremely controversial.
Well, I mean, nobody knows. She says she was born a female.
Well, I think she's wrong because she has XY chromosomes.
Well, she said she was born a female, raised a female, whatever. And so RG3 commented on that. I'm just guessing, again, speculation. ESPN probably doesn't want you chiming in on that.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. Is if they don't want you to tell them, look, do you want to keep your job? Stay off these controversial topics on Twitter. And if they keep doing it, okay, I can see why they can make that move. That's why it's not completely 100% financial.
No, it's definitely not. But in it,
even
why
though that's what ESPN's saying,
I know they're saying that, but I don't even know why they would say that, because when they honor the contract anyway, it makes zero sense. So I don't know how they can even justify saying that. I know Andrew Marchand reported that.
Maybe. Do you think it was in their contract? It's a guaranteed contract when he signs it? I don't know. I don't know how that works.
Probably. But how can you say it's a financial decision if you're going to pay it as contract?
I don't know. It doesn't make sense.
It makes zero sense.
Yeah, correct.
But whatever. Clearly they pissed him off. And listen, Robert's fine. He's made a lot of money. He's had a lot of endorsements.
I think he'll end up
at like the Big Ten Network or something. He could be a big superstar there.
I'm guessing Fox will scoop him up.
Maybe.
I think they were interested in him before.
I mean, these guys flip-flop. Like, Shannon Sharp was on Fox, now he's on ESPN.
Yeah.
Skip Bayless was on ESPN, then went to Fox. I know now he's done. Mm-hmm. But a lot of them flip-flop.
He is a talented
Keyshawn Johnson,
broadcast.
You mentioned, went from ESPN to Fox.
The thing is, like you say, if he would just do the games, like, he's good at that. But it's not enough for him. He needs more attention.
Yep.
That's the problem. If he would just focus on analyzing games and previewing games and stuff, he's good at that. But he just needs more.
Coming up next, it's Fridays with Feinstein here on The Fan. The Fan. So we just had Chris Doering on, and he alluded to it towards the end. I guess you asked him about it.
Yeah, just want to get his thoughts.
RG3 laid off by ESPN, as well as Sam Ponder, two high-profile analysts on ESPN. Obviously, RG3, we had on the show for a year doing call-ins.
Mm-hmm.
Was pretty popular, it seemed like, on ESPN. And when he first burst on the scene, people were surprised, like, wow, he's pretty good calling games.
Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't a main player. And then all of a sudden, he started doing more and more games and more high-profile games. And people were like, man, he's pretty good on the call. And then they expanded his role to the NFL.
Yep.
And people...
Monday Night Football.
Just assumed the meteoric rise was going to continue. But ESPN pulled the plug.
It's weird. I don't quite get it. I know. Listen, he's a nice guy, and he was, you know, nice on his show and everything. But he is. Let's be honest.
I think he's a little bit corny. I think he's hard to work with.
I don't know if he's hard to work with. Jason knows people over there. Maybe he is. But I know he's all about. He's an attention guy. He always has to be the center of attention.
The last thing that I saw is he did. From the Olympics, something with a croissant, his wife.
I know that was the dumbest picture ever. I can't believe that got so much attention.
But he gets millions of views on these social media posts. So,
yeah.
I mean, he'll be fine. He could probably make a killing just doing social media.
I got a good friend who I went to college with, who's a producer at ESPN. Mm-hmm. He's been up there for years.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him about it, and I said, was it simply financial? Which didn't really... jive to me, because he's got 2 years left on his contract and it's guaranteed, so he's going to get paid.
Do we know it's guaranteed?
That's what the story says. They're going to honor it.
Makes no sense then. Yeah, so it makes no sense.
Well, that's why.
Financial.
That's why his answer is interesting. He says it's financial, and people didn't like him. I know you probably spent time with him in D.C. He's just weird. Didn't vibe with people. And on SVP shows, SVP calls the shots. It was clear in September he wasn't going to survive that show. He made a good point about Keyshawn. When Keyshawn got let go last year, he had just signed an $18 million contract. He got every penny. Mm-hmm. So they honor those contracts, but for whatever reason, I think it's more than financial.
They blew it.
I think it's how you are viewed by, you know, the other talent, by the producers, by management. If you're not liked, you don't last.
They blew out a lot of people, though. Remember the layoffs? I don't know if it was a year or two ago.
Yeah.
I mean, clearly they've been laying off people. I don't know about the honoring the money, and I certainly don't know any of the behind the scenes. I do think ESPN sometimes worry about their image, and I don't know the specific posts, but companies don't want you diving into politics, and I think he's had some political tweets.
Well, Sam Ponder has done that too.
Right. They don't want you doing that.
Well, why don't you just tell them?
Well, but if they don't follow your lead,
okay, then you let them
go. If you're ESPN and Disney...
But if they don't like it, I can't imagine the upper management at ESPN isn't telling them, hey, let's back off that.
Now, that said, I think I saw...
I don't think he can help himself.
I think I saw Herb Street, who basically said, I've been around too long, I don't give an F, here are my views. Mm-hmm. You know, so you can, if you're really, really popular, I think it was Herb Street...
Depends if your views
that you might be able to pull it off.
But if your views are in line with your company sort of general feeling, then you're going to be fine.
But I think I'm sure that all the things you say are true and contributed to it. I think had he just stuck with, this is my own personal opinion and speculation, had he just stuck to what people were actually saying he was very good at, which was being the color commentator on college football games. Now, he never was the color commentator in the NFL games. He was...
Monday Night Countdown.
He was Monday Night Countdown, and he was kind of their goofy bit guy, is the way I saw it. They made him run against the Seahawk or whatever, the Falcon. I can't remember what he ran against. He always seemed to do bits. They were like, you're the bits guy. But I think if he just stuck to that, put his head down and stuck to that, he'd been fine. I think my guess... My speculation is some of the social media stuff got him in trouble.
That's what makes...
Because he does over-the-top social media, stuff.
You guys pay attention to that. I don't. But I would say that, okay, it's one thing to take him off the NFL Monday Night Countdown, but just let him ride his, if you, unless you really don't like him as a person, let him ride out his contract calling college football games.
Also, I think on the NFL side, quite frankly, I'm going to guess he's going to be the new bit guy.
They replaced
him with Jason Kelce.
Yes.
That's what happens. It's kind of like in the NFL on CBS. Didn't they wipe out Boomer and Phil Sims?
Mm-hmm.
Like eventually, now he's still young. RG3 is very young. But eventually they wipe out guys because new guys come in.
Right.
Yeah, this is different. This is just because he's a polarizing guy. I don't think he's a bad guy, but he's a me guy. Mm-hmm. It's a very much me-centered guy. And, you know, I'm sure, he probably has pissed them off with some of the social media stuff. Not that it was horrible, but it's just so attention-y.
He did cheesy over the top. Like, he would go, my top five Heisman candidates right now. And he was,
there's nothing wrong with that.
I know, but
the political stuff, I think, probably they don't love. It seemed like I was talking to CK about it, and the phrase that a lot of people use is engagement farming. So he's just clearly just putting stuff out there to try to get as many clicks as he can.
Mm-hmm. He'll land a job because...
Oh, I think he'll end up in Big Ten Network or something.
I'm looking at
but they'd hire him 2 seconds.
His Instagram, he's got 716,000 followers.
That's a ton on Instagram.
I'm trying to see if I can find out the views. But his view counts are probably humongous. I mean, here, the picture with the croissant and his wife. Some reason I can't see that one. But there's also one of just him holding this huge croissant. It's got 146,000 likes.
Yeah.
I don't pay attention to the Twitter posts like you guys do. But the story I read was Sam Ponder, mm-hmm. who I think is very good, routinely puts... her thoughts on controversial political views on Twitter. And I don't know if that's the reason they let her go. She's making 7 figures as well. Maybe that could be a budget thing, but she's very good.
She was very outspoken about the boys should play boys sports. Was very outspoken about that. And it's just a touchy issue for
RG3 went in on that too.
Yeah. So maybe ESPN said, hey, we got
to
stay off.
By the way, I happen to agree with them, but it's a very hot button issue.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very,
well,
very
Sam
hot
Ponder and RG3 let go.
Because I'm looking at his last post. He did one, the Algerian boxer, which was somewhat controversial.
Extremely controversial.
Well, nobody knows. She says she was born a female.
Well, I think she's wrong because she has XY chromosomes.
Well, she's said she was born a female, raised a female, whatever. And so RG3 commented on that. I'm just guessing. Again, speculation. ESPN probably doesn't want you chiming in on that,
right? And that's what I'm saying. Is if they don't want you to tell them, look, do you want to keep your job? Stay off these controversial topics on Twitter. And if they keep doing it, okay, I can see why they can make that move. That's why it's not completely 100% financial.
No, it's definitely not. But in it, and that's
even
why
though that's what ESPN's saying,
I know they're saying that, but I don't even know why they would say that because. When they honor the contract anyway, it makes zero sense. So I don't know how they can even justify saying that. I know Andrew Marchand reported that.
Do you think it was in their contract? It's a guaranteed contract when he signs it? I don't know. I don't know how that works.
Probably. But how can you say it's a financial decision if you're going to pay it as contract?
I don't know. It doesn't make sense.
It makes zero sense.
Yeah, correct.
But whatever. Clearly they pissed him off. And listen, Robert's fine. Made a lot of money. Had a lot of endorsements.
I think he'll end up at
like the Big Ten Network or something. He could be a big superstar there.
I'm guessing Fox will scoop him up.
Maybe.
I think they were interested in him before.
I mean, these guys flip-flop. Like Shannon Sharp was on Fox. Now he's on ESPN.
Yeah.
Skip Bayless was on ESPN. Then went to Fox. I know now he's done. Mm-hmm. But. A lot of them flip-flop.
He is a talented
Keyshawn Johnson,
broadcast.
You mentioned, went from ESPN to Fox.
The thing is, like you say, if he would just do the games, like he's good at that. But it's not enough for him. He needs more attention.
Yep.
That's the problem. That's the problem. If he would just focus on analyzing games and previewing games and stuff, he's good at that. But he just needs more.
Coming up next, it's Fridays with Feinstein here on The Fan.